Hi, I'm Jack Harvey from the UK, listening to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. With the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 442, July 14th. Vive la France, 2010. Steve?
This F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by Cameron Karting. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Red Line Oil Karting Championships. You can find Cameron Karting at CameronKarting.com. Check him out. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, Christian Horner and his regrets. Bernie wants 16 million pounds or you're not going to be in Formula One. And will Michael Schumacher stick to his three-year contract? Bernie and Jackie Stewart say, no way, Jose. And, of course, Motorsports Mondial with Nasser Hamid. And special interview or conversation between Nasser and Adrian Zog. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Absolutely wonderful. Getting to celebrate Bastille Day, July 14th.
Bastille Day.
Oh, la, 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 la. Yep. That's when we put aside the Stella and we'll have to drink.
Busted everybody out of jail.
We'll have to drink, you know, 1664. Which is all right. And we'll be busting everybody out of jail.
You'll be drinking wine tonight.
Well, that too, you know. You got to have your Chateau Margaux and all of that. But anyway, let's get right to it. Mark Webber's still in the news. He'll be in the news. And, of course, McLaren claiming that the ridiculousness at Red Bull is going to help them win the championship. Because, well, they're already leading both championships. And Red Bull, the irony is, everybody knows they have the fastest car on the grid. There's no question about that. Pole position, pole position, pole position.
Front row, front row, front row.
And these guys are committing Harry Carey or Harry Kitty or whatever. And it's just a sad state of affairs. And fortunately, it's because Christian Horner, you know, who's, I think, doing a pretty good job, is young, 37, and has not read enough Formula One books to see what happens when you have two drivers, highly competitive, and their name is Prost and Senna.
Well, you know, I think that he's in a kind of a rock and a hard place because Vettel really isn't experienced enough to basically annoy him, number one. I'm sure Mark Webber actually has something in his contract that says he can't do that. But what I really think he needs to do is just stamp on them both and go, hey, your teammates, do not take each other out, period. Because right now, it's basically two races now that they've lost pretty good sizable amount of points. This in Turkey, where basically they eliminated one or the other of the two drivers, or, you know, slowed the other one down. And you can't be doing that.
No, they should be doing 1-2 finishes. You know, whoever finishes, fine. It doesn't matter until you get closer to the end of the season. Yeah. Where this point spread, the point spread will be close enough to where then you could finally let them go and fight for the World Drivers' Championship and make sure you wrap up the Constructors' Championship. I mean, even Jenson Button, who says, you know, McLaren's probably going to get this easily. He says, yes. It means they're going to be busy discussing where they're going to go from here. We've got a good relationship here. However, many people take the mickey out of how well Lewis and I get on. It works well with our team, and it means the guys back in the factory are not worrying about us and how we are with each other.
One small advantage at McLaren. What do both of these guys already have?
World championships.
It's not unlike over at Red Bull, where neither of these guys have had world championships. Frankly, both of them came from teams that could barely get themselves to the front of the grid, let alone put themselves in the running for the championship. Completely different dynamic in that regard. No wonder Lewis and Jensen get along fine. Both of them have world championships, so it's not a loss if they happen to lose it to their teammate.
I agree. That's a very good point, Steve. Keep up the good work. You're right. That does help alleviate the tension and the high pressure when each already has a championship. And, of course, you have Sebastian Vettel, who used to be called the future Schumacher, and Mark Webber, who's really on the other side of the coin, because really he's looking at a possible retirement soon.
Well, he's really kind of probably not his last, but probably his next to last contract in Formula One. Unless he can somehow, you know, pull the Rubinho and last forever. But I would say, you know, and not only that, but he's the type of guy who's going to, when he gets to a point, is going to be willing to walk away because he's got another life.
Exactly. I agree. But Christian Horner, on the other hand, has admitted that he regrets not talking to Mark. And, quote, he says, Mark and I have always enjoyed a very good and transparent relationship. The 36-year-old concluded, I've known him for over a decade, and I've always supported him as I do Sebastian. They were both up on stage at our post-race party on Sunday, singing together with myself and Adrian Newey. Now, I'm not sure what that means, if they're all singing together.
They're all
young and good actors. I wouldn't put very
well,
much
that,
into that.
You know, maybe there had been a couple of Stellas, and they were a little bit...
Well, I have to admit that Mark Webber has upped his game, and Sebastian Vettel, taking the new wing, knowing that he broke his version of that wing, I think he might even have some questions on why Red Bull as a team did what they did.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking Vettel probably, for Sebastian, it probably wouldn't have mattered. Obviously, it didn't make that much difference in the car as far as what it was doing. What these guys need to do is, when they lock out the front row, is make sure that when they get through that first lap, they are 1-2. Doesn't matter which one is 1-2.
I agree.
But they need to be the two guys out in front because, frankly, if they can do that, they can just run away from the field.
I agree completely. I think
Take
you're right.
Take the biggest possible points haul.
I agree. Focus on 1-2s, and then the last three or four races of the season, you could say, okay, we're going to cut you guys loose, but please, you know.
Finish.
No, it's a very good point. Let's move on to Fernando Alonso, el hombre muy macho de España. And even some people think, you know, that I won't knock Fernando because I'm such a Fernando fan. But, I mean, I do knock him when he gets out of control.
Exactly. Nobody's immune.
Not
here on F1 Weekly.
That's right. When we hand it out, it gets handed out. And, of course, Fernando Alonso, it comes out that the stewards told them to let Kubica by three times. Right after it happened, they got on the horn and told Ferrari, you need to let Kubica by because that way everything will be cool. They told, and Ferrari refused.
So basically, his team screwed him over.
I think so too.
Because frankly, there's no, you know, if the stewards have told you that you're going to be penalized if you don't let him by, what do? You let him by.
Absolutely. You know what? Because you only lose one position. They're not thinking straight over there. Think about it. If you get a penalty, then you're in 14th, 15th, 16th position.
You know, this is really the way this season is starting to devolve at Ferrari. You know, it's starting to kind of smell a bit like Ferrari before Michael Schumacher, when it was run by a bunch of Italians who just were so passionate about what they were doing, they kind of lost sight of the goal.
Yeah, you mean that they don't have the Ross Braun mentality back there?
Frankly, I think it's that longer view maybe that Ross has, that, you know, basically kind of going, well, wait a minute. You know, if we give up that position now, we're not going to end up out of the points.
It's just one position. See, they just really didn't think logically. You're right. The passion came in. I mean, this is what the FIA told them. And this is from Charlie Whiting, I believe. We told Ferrari three times they should give the position back to Kubica. And we told them that immediately right after the overtaking maneuver on the radio. I suggested to them that if they exchanged positions again, there would be no need for the stewards to intervene. They should have just reacted on it right away.
Yeah, frankly, that's gross negligence on Ferrari's pit. Because I'm sure they didn't tell Fernando.
But I was really impressed with Fernando coming out yesterday and saying that, yes, we will win the championship still, even though he's 47 points behind. But I'm impressed on how he refuses to give up. And even though, I mean, listen, guys, I'm a Renault fan. I'm rooting for Robert Kubica all the way. And I know Fernando is a diva. But you know what? At this level, if you're not a type A personality, completely wacko and competitive, and a little...
You're
not going to be in Formula One.
I would much rather hear that from a driver than listen to what Yarner truly would say last year at Toyota, you know, when they were completely out of it. But he was basically going, we're not going to do very well this weekend.
Yeah.
Why would you... You know, it's basically being a pessimist about your own car and your own abilities to get something from that car. It's like... You know, I understand not setting the expectations very high, but you don't have to actually make the statement.
Not only that, but even if they're unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, it comes to, hey, I think we're going to have a great weekend. You don't have to say that, you know, we're going to win. I think we're going to have a great weekend. Not that I don't think we're going to do very well this weekend. It's just like, you're not going to do very well this weekend.
And you know what? Don't forget, Fernando is also making up for, we don't have Flavio anymore. We don't have Bravo, 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 Fisichella. So, you know, there's some stuff that's missing. So, you know, this stuff, those vacuums have to be filled with other interesting things.
Yeah, and Fernando's getting paid a good hunk of money to basically be their cheerleader.
Ferrari. And don't forget, entertaining isn't just in the car. It's when they speak, it's when they rant, it's when they get pissed off, it's when they accuse everybody of being evil.
Well,
it's
frankly,
all of it.
There really isn't another motorsports venue that we could do a show about, because most other motorsports don't have as much off-track
politics
stuff to do.
This is exciting stuff. Now, speaking of off-track politics, as we move on, because really this Fernando and Mark Webber thing, I'm getting burnt out.
Well, it's on. What's going to happen next race? Because that's pretty much last race stuff now.
Exactly. And quickly, I want to mention that Nasser will be flying to Karachi because he's the king of Karachi. And then after that, he'll be going to the German Grand Prix at Hockenheim and doing more interviews for, not me, but for you guys. So
that's for you lovely listeners.
Exactly. Quickly now, Bernie Ecclestone has announced, and this is all because of USF1, because of the disaster, the humiliation. So, and Bernie doesn't want any junk anymore filtering. In other words, no more riffraff in Formula One. He wants nothing but quality. So he's put...
why is my mind suddenly jumping to HRT?
Well, yeah, but that was before this is happening. He doesn't like HRT that much either, even though I think he'll help them survive. But there'll be a deposit now for new Formula One teams of £16 million to show that they have the funding required to compete at the pinnacle of motorsport racing.
That's basically to cover their freight charges for the year.
Well, so in other words, you don't get this, you know, we're going to be there, dude, have a press conference in North Carolina and say how we're going to be cool, hire your son to design the car, and become a complete disaster. And you know what? I'm for that.
Well, if it keeps teams like USF1 from getting spots on the grid that they cannot really have absolutely no business getting and no opportunity, no way they're going to be able to get there, great. But $16 million is a lot of money to basically put in escrow when that could be used to fund your team.
Well, that's, you know, too bad. And I like how Bernie put it. We have told them that if they can't put $16 million in, we don't want them.
I'm just wondering whether or not that's basically a deposit that's going to be used to defer the costs of the, because I know that basically the teams buy most of their international transport from Bernie. So does that money go towards that? Because I'm thinking, you know, the number of flyaway races, the amount of cargo that they move, you know, $16 million is probably about what the freight charges for the year are.
Easily. My other quote from Bernie is, he wasn't happy with the performance of the three new teams who have struggled to match the pace of the established teams and have yet to score a point between them thus far.
Bernie, have you looked to see how difficult it is to score points in F1 now?
But it's supposed to be difficult, Stephen.
I know, exactly. It's like you expect these guys to come out of the gate. What sport would you have if these guys could come out of the gate and score points?
I agree.
You know, the cars.
That's the excitement.
If that were the case, it would be a spec series because it's the only way you'd be able to do it.
Well, so far, well, it looks like all three teams will be here next year, which is really, for your first year, that's success.
Yeah, well, basically, it's a year of development since there's no testing. You've got to be at the track just to run your car to find out what you've got to do to make it faster.
Exactly. Anyway, let's move on to Williams. Williams, obviously, with their blown diffuser, have shown a lot more performance with Rubens Barrichello finishing in fifth place. He was elated with that. And, of course, now he's already saying that he can't imagine himself being let go for 2011 and expects Williams to keep him, even though he's the old man from the sea.
Yeah. From the deep, dark sea.
No, he says right now, Bernie, sit down.
Yeah.
This is Rubinho. He says right now it is almost a waste of time not to have me in the car and driving. In terms of speed, I am performing better than I ever have. Think this positiveness is just making such change. And people say, well, you are not winning races. How can you be so positive? Well, it's because as a team, you have to go and believe as a team. We'll produce something that will put us back to the podium area. And then maybe next year, make a good car that can effectively bring the first place. Go, Rubinho, go. See, now he's positive.
Yeah, well, and the fact is that he doesn't want to stop driving yet. It's all there is to
it.
And
he admits it. He feels invigorated. He's driving well.
And his car is... It's basically the best Williams that we've seen in, what, the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, the best part, and the only part that he has to worry about, is he's outperforming that new young GP2 champion that's right next to him.
Yeah.
And that's all he has to do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that is his best invitation to being in that seat next to
him. That's the barometer. Yeah. And as long as he's beating Hülkenberg, he has nothing else to say. Hülkenberg is the one that should be worried, because he's not performing to everybody's expectations at all.
No, he had a pretty good race at Silverstone, but again, Rubinho's making him look like a rookie.
And rookies, he needs to be more Vettel-ish. That's what he needs to do.
Or Lou Hamish. Just, he basically needs...
See, I didn't say Fernando-esque.
It's one of those really tough spots to be kind of, you know, you want to get out on the edge, but you really want to finish the race.
To be honest with you, I think I want to see him trying harder and maybe making more mistakes, more spins and more crashes. Because right now we don't see that much of him crashing and burning and flipping the car. But because I think he's playing it too conservative.
He might be.
I think
because I really expected to see his game step up when we got back to Europe.
Right.
Because these are tracks that he's raced.
Exactly. And not only that, but Hülkenberg, you know, you see him, he goes out there, he's qualifying, he's competing, but you never see any really pushing and risk-taking that I need to see from him.
Yeah, you don't see him getting out on the edge of the curbs and stuff.
And getting people pissed off. Have you ever heard of anybody waving their fist at the Hulk?
Well, Fernando just needs to get behind him, you know, about 18 car lengths behind, and Fernando will start waving at him.
No, I'm sure
he
will.
Like he did to Schumacher.
Exactly. Now, before we go to break, quickly, I found this absolutely ridiculous. As a Renault fan, I think everybody's happy at Renault with Kubica, and there's talk about maybe trying to get Kimi Raikkonen, which is really wonderful, even though I don't think that's going to happen. But today, or yesterday, should I say, I found this, saying that Eric Boullier has admitted that his team are considering signing Sebastian Buemi. Where is the holy water? I need some holy water.
Does he have money?
Well, you know, don't get me wrong. Everybody in Formula One is talented. But we need to pick it up, guys. We need a Robert Kubica-type teammate. Somebody like a Kimi Raikkonen. Somebody machismo.
Well,
Wendy has not showed me very much of anything.
Frankly, Rubinho would be a better choice than Buemi.
You know, to be honest with you, I think Romain Grosjean would be a better choice. I think giving a second chance to Romain Grosjean is not too far off.
No, because he's obviously a talented driver. He's just tearing up, what is it, the Masters here, whatever.
Pole winning.
Yeah. Give him a car that can run, because last season he didn't have one. Get him back out there this season. I agree with you. I think that giving Romain Grosjean a second chance might be a better choice than Sebastian Buemi. Buemi isn't the worst guy on the grid.
No, he's not. They're all talented. But when
he's got a seat. And right now, kind of odd that, you know, we're halfway through the season and Toro Rosso isn't looking to throw either of their drivers out.
Well, not only that, before they signed Robert Kubica, they were saying how wonderful Robert Kubica is. Now we're going to start, we're really serious about challenging for the podiums. We're thinking about getting Kimi Raikkonen. Rob Kubica acknowledges that Kimi Raikkonen would be a great choice and a great teammate. Now that they've signed Rob Kubica for 2012, they come out and say, well, we're looking at Sebastian Buemi. I mean, I hope Robert Kubica gets on this meeting and says, what are you thinking about?
Yeah, I got a better idea. Go get Heidfeld back.
You know, I mean,
if you're going to go that direction,
give him
a solid number two.
I admit that Sebastian Buemi had a good drive in Canada, and he shows, you know, fleeting talent. But so does Petrov.
Yeah. Frankly, it would be a straight-up trade to go Buemi.
What makes Robert Kubica so great, it's consistent. Consistently, constantly on the top six. You know, always doing the same thing. Never any mistakes or few mistakes.
Basically no fatal mistakes. He qualifies.
He consistently basically gets the same.
Yeah, exactly. Gets the most out of the car he can. You know, I don't think it makes a lot of sense to get Buemi. You know, who knows? Maybe Buemi's got some money behind him or something.
I don't know, but I really hope that Renault thinks about this and go back to what they were talking about. Serious, serious talent like a Kimi Raikkonen. Or if they can't get that, you know, I don't know, but Buemi certainly isn't, you know, unless he's super cheap.
Yeah, well, there's another thought.
Anyway, last but not least, Bernie Ecclestone and Jackie Stewart coming out saying that Schumacher will end this ridiculous return to Formula One at the end of this season and will not drive again forever. Your thoughts, Stephen?
Wow. Bernie wants Michael out?
Yeah, and remember how excited he was when
when he came back?
And they greeted each other and there was hugging and tears of joy.
Because, you know, he knew that was going to improve ratings in Germany like nobody's business.
Which will. I mean, it did, and it has.
And I don't know that he knows Michael that well, because I can't see Michael walking away after
Michael's
a year.
Not that kind of a
because
guy.
Because that's not the personality that he's shown us over the last decade and a half as a race car driver. Unless, you know, the only thing I could see that could happen that could keep Michael out next season would be for him to have a sufficiently terrifying accident that injures him to where he maybe re-injures his neck.
Well, there's only one thing, and you know what I'm going to call it? Deja vu. And this would be the worst thing to happen to Michael Schumacher.
Ross Brawn's going to go get Kimi Raikkonen to take his seat?
You mean Norbert Hogg? Well, Norbert Hogg was at Kimi Raikkonen's house. A few days ago, Norbert was going, Kimi.
Here, look at these wonderful Deutschmarks that I can give you.
Kimi doesn't really get excited with Deutschmarks. He's pretty happy. He just needs a winning car. But could you imagine in the meeting when they go to Schumacher and say, Schumi, you know, we really appreciate all your effort, but Nico's been out-qualifying you at every race, and we think that your replacement for next year is going to be Kimi Raikkonen. And then he's going to have to go at that press conference and says, I'm going to retire.
Yeah, you know, I think they pull that, and Michael might actually go postal.
Yeah, so I really hope that doesn't happen because, you know, I mean, he is a human being. German, but still.
Yeah, no, that, but, you know, it doesn't make sense. If they've got, you know, Nico Rosberg has proven that he could win if he had a quality machine, you know, had top-notch machinery, you know, and having Michael there basically to help mentor him and also to help develop the car, I don't see Michael walking away.
We'll see what happens.
I could see maybe after the end of the second season if he's still in the doldrums, but not after the first.
Well, we'll see what happens.
But, you know, Bernie's never wrong.
Well, Bernie says, I believe he will stop after this season. What does his heart say? I will believe it only when I see him on the starting grid in March. So there you have it. Everybody believes that Schumi will hang it up once again. And possibly Kimi coming back. But I don't know. Kimi's having fun in the WRC.
Again,
even though he crashed out.
I can't see why anybody's talking about Kimi coming back because Kimi's having... Have you seen him do an interview?
He
actually talks.
Yeah.
And he's having fun. And I think he wants to get himself to a point where he can actually compete against Sebastian Loeb. He's a competitor. He's a race car driver. He wants to get good at rally before he thinks about doing anything else.
Yeah, well, competing with Sebastian Loeb,
that's a completely different... He wants to... That's his goal.
Yeah, well, with Loeb...
You always want to set the goal a little high.
Yeah, well, Sebastian Loeb did in Bulgaria. Everybody is trying to reach that goal.
Actually, if Mercedes is trying to hire anybody, or for that matter, Renault, maybe you should, you know, get Sebastian to test in the car because the guy can drive.
Keep up the good work, Steven. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We've got an outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Of course, stay tuned for the interview with Adrian Zog. We'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king of Karachi, Nasser Hamid.
This is Formula One.
Greetings, and FIFA World Cup is over. Regards to all the racing fans, the chain of success and stampede of the bulls continue at Silverstone. In GP2, Maldonado makes it happen again, and in GP3, our amigo Esteban Gutierrez now has twice the points of second place man halfway through the season, which is very, very impressive. We shall start with F1. The four-way battle for the championship might become ugly between the teammates. While Red Bull wants to maintain peace and harmony, the basic instincts of racing drivers might take them on a different course. Called the collision course, also known as cage rattling in the palatial studios of F1 Weekly. I have a feeling this is going to become like McLaren 1988.
You believe that?
Down and right ugly.
You think?
I think so.
I think so, too.
Because you know what's going to happen as fewer and fewer races are left. Dropping out or not scoring too many points is going to be very crucial. And I think these two people... I'm calling this... you know, they have the dog and pony show. This is the dingo and pony show.
Well, what's really exciting is, you know, we've had Prost and Senna. we've now had your favorite, of course, the texting Fernando and Hamilton. And I didn't think we would get such great adversaries at each other so quickly since 2007, but here they are.
Well, you know, Mark, all credit to Mark Webber. I mean, I have
Absolutely.
To say, I was saying again and again that, you know, Vettel will blow him away.
We did.
And I never said it's going to blow him away by half a second or a second, but slow, you know, the slow, easy snake on the mongoose type of choke hold. But Mark Webber
snake
is...
Snake on the mongoose side?
Snake and the mongoose.
Wow.
Have you ever seen that show?
No.
Oh, this is incredible.
Yeah. I live in a little house and...
Well, the snake wraps himself around the mongoose body and just chokes him.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm very, very... Driver of the year for me is Mark Webber for really stepping up to the plate and,
And making
Aussie grit, you know.
And making less mistakes.
Yeah.
Than Sebastian Vettel, yeah. Even though he's made some mistakes as well, I just love the excitement, the electricity in the air. You just cut it with a knife.
Yeah, you know, not bad for number two. It was like an uppercut Aussie style. And then he's saying that we definitely don't want to hear the German anthem in Germany. But he's joined the ANZ Corps.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and what's so great is he was managed by Flavio. Fernando was managed by Flavio. See? Flavio brings personalities to these guys, and I love it.
Yeah, me too. That's interesting. And I really think this is going to get more and more ugly, because nobody's going to play second fiddle here. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny, when we first got into the season, we thought perhaps it might be Fernando and Massa, or even Button and Hamilton.
Yeah.
Boy, were we wrong.
Yes. And we also predicted, like 95% of the world, that Schumacher will be the snake and Nico Rosberg will be the mongoose.
That's true.
So now we know how much we know.
Yeah, we know nothing.
Exactly. Okay, well, moving on. Exhibit A in the Hall of Motorsports Justice, where verdicts are read on racetracks, would be the season 1986, and Exhibit B will be the season 2007.
Uh-huh.
And we already talked about 1988. Championship leader Lewis Hamilton may be the biggest beneficiary if exhibits A or B are repeated, taste of which he enjoyed in a Turkish delight when Vettel and Webber clashed in Istanbul. Other such delights are expected in some of the remaining races, as Red Bull package is still the best, as evidenced at Silverstone. The young whippersnapper may be handicapped by his lack of experience, despite being the golden boy of the Austrian Empire. But on the other side of the garage, or garage, as they say in some countries, the self-described and treated as such by the team number two driver now has 3 wins this season, more than any other driver, which is very impressive. And fully determined to make the best of opportunity, which was so lacking in his Williams and Jaguar days. The cat is out of the bag. Number two driver will not and should not play pussyfoot to another driver, so another driver can become world champion. If you're a champion, you got to win it on the track. Okay? You know that feeling.
I do.
Yeah. The cat scratch fever is predicted by many pundits to erupt at McLaren also. And I have a very strong feeling that if right now Red Bull has the package, if McLaren can jump ahead of them, then I think Button and Lewis will be cutting each other's throat. It's the nature of the business, man.
Well, I made a point in the first segment that basically one of the things I think that is to McLaren's benefit is that both these drivers already have a world championship, which probably makes them a little less aggressive than, say, a Webber and a Vettel, where neither does and both want it really badly.
Exactly. Very true. All this means we may have a real scratch for the championship till the final race of the season. Too bad Alonso and Massa are now in the doghouse. They're not going to win the championship this year. But
Alonso said he's still going to win.
No, not this year. I agree with him, but not this year.
Oh.
When he has a competitor, he's going to win. There's no question in my mind. This is how the championship looks after the British Grand Prix, round 10 in this year's championship. Lewis Hamilton, 145 points, 2 victories, Istanbul and Montreal. And Montreal is the place where he scored his first ever win. Jenson Button, 133 points, 2 victories, Australia and China. Both of them were in the rain, rain affected, right? Okay, Mark Webber, 128 points, 3 wins, Monaco, Barcelona, and Silverstone. You know, I read somewhere in the, press conference, an interview, he was quoted as saying that they must have asked him, will you rescue Vettel if he was drowning in the ocean? He said, yeah, I would. And I guess the next question was, would you take him out for a bar, to a drink, at your, especially at your own bar? And he says, definitely not. So it's simmering. It's a simmering situation.
It's a slow simmer right now.
Yeah. And fourth is Sebastian Vettel, 121 points, winner in Valencia and Malaysia. Remember how a couple of years ago everybody was, oh, he's so cutie doll, he's so happy, blah,
so
blah, blah. Yeah, and see, when the heat is on, this is nothing but a second Schumacher in the making. And who can blame him, you know? I mean, it's world championship. This is not, you know...
It's serious business, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's not checkers.
Yeah. It's not Arkansas tractor pull.
I understand.
Yeah. Okay, in the Constructor Championship, McLaren leads with 278 points. Red Bull second, 249 points. And Ferrari third with 165 points. Still to go. A lot of racing and a lot of cage rattling. And as I said, I'm calling it the Dingo and Pony Show.
I like it.
Yeah, let's see what happens. Now, this brings us to a cup of tea with Mr. Peter Brazier and some interesting factoid from the British Grand Prix.
Jeff!
Yeah.
I've just been round to see our new neighbours. Very nice, but lime green sofa and mauve carpet.
Yeah.
And when they offered me a cup of tea,
yeah,
it wasn't PG tips.
Really?
What? No PG? God, have they no taste?
Mm. You can really taste the difference in a cup of PG. Tender tips make tasty tea.
A golden cup of PG. That's what I call good taste.
So, Jill, what was their house like?
Oh...
From Tea Kettle to Sebastian Vettel, 10th career pole position means he has as many pole positions as the 1970 world champion Jochen Rindt. But of course, a lot more races these days in a season. Lewis Hamilton, listen to this, in only his fourth F1 season, which is just halfway through, basically three and a half seasons, has racked up 33 podium finishes in 62 starts. Same as 67 world champion Denny Hulme and 79 champion Jody Scheckter. Very impressive and sure to give Hemi haters, who are out there, some Nando blues.
Nando blues.
And let me just tell you, you were asking me. Nando blues is a disease discovered by the Danube during the 2007 season. It makes you feel lost in Wonderland, so much so that I had to call a light, overnight call to Dr. Mark Farrington, our in-house surgeon general, and he said amputation of current contract is a recommended cure. Takes care of the problem very quickly. What say you?
Well, you know what? Mark Webber and Fernando Alonso are actually pretty good friends, which is funny, sort of. But I'm sure they because they did chit-chat right after he qualified on pole,
mm-hmm,
and Mark Webber went to Fernando and told him about the front wing thing, and Fernando goes, ay, 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 let me text Pedrosa.
Yeah, but actually I was listening to another podcast which ends with .co.uk, and I think Mark Webber said that he Saturday night got a call, he had a chat with, chat, not a text, with Flavio.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he said, he told him, you know, go and do the best you can and show them you're the man. So this is getting intense, too intense.
Flavio's going to steer him in the right direction.
Yeah. Okay, Nico Rosberg. 80 races and still looking for win number one. And yeah, it's so much has to do with the package, you know. So we'll see what happens. It would be very interesting to see. I was reading actually an interview with Niki Lauda. And by the way, this magazine, you know, which is put out by a certain GPWeek.com, which is free on the web. And there's an interview with Tavo Helman, the gentleman who is bringing the U.S. Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And, you know, they ask him who are the sponsors, you know. Oh, that's none of anybody's business. So I think these people are very well connected politically, and they'll pull some strings. And
you mean George Bush is going to
get
some money in?
Yeah, I won't be surprised if the track is built by Halliburton or Bechtel. kid you not.
General Dynamics.
Yeah, yeah. And because they have this thing called Major Events Fund, okay, where they're putting some extra taxes or whatever, and it's coming into a pool where they're going to major events, they will promote, you know, state of Texas. Good idea. But when the smart people of Texas will find out that $25 million is going to stage a Formula One race, Grand Prix, with Kimi Raikkonen, they're going to say, well, who the hell is he? You know, well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Okay, but I brought it up not to make fun of this guy or anything, but it's an interesting interview on gpweek.com. If you cannot log in there, just go to sutton-images.com, and then you can click on that. So do you probably read that, right?
I do, but yeah. You know, I can't divulge everything.
No, I know. You have high standards.
Yes.
And you are sophisticated. Cool. Okay, so where are we now? Red Bull, based in Milton Keynes, near Mr. Brazier's palatial estate, but racing under an Austrian license, they have now led 70% of the distance run so far. So it just tells you how dominating this package is. And what a pathetic shame it would be if they still lose out. With this domination, one of the riders should win the championship, but stranger things have happened in Formula One. Ferrari, most successful team in British Grand Prix history, 15 wins, one more than McLaren. Ferrari's first ever Grand Prix victory came at Silverstone in 1951, and of course when I say Grand Prix, Formula One Grand Prix, courtesy of Pampas Bull, Jose Froline Gonzalez of Argentina. Williams, their first win came here in 1979, courtesy of Rega, Claire Regazzoni of Switzerland, and I was listening to the race live on BBC shortwave radio when it happened. Jones was leading Alan Jones, and he had a... Then there were the guys saying, "Tragedy! We have a tragedy!" And his engine done blowed up. So Regazzoni won. And the 100th win also came here in 1997, courtesy of Jacques Villeneuve. Okay, now we move on to other racing action. Another thing I'm enjoying lately, which I'm sure other listeners are also doing, I've been punching in on YouTube, GP3, GP2 action. So that's a 10-20 minutes of I can watch GP3, which is not shown here. So it's interesting. GP2 race. Feature race winner, Pastor Maldonado from Venezuela, over pole sitter Jules Bianchi, who is now in the Ferrari driver development program. Sunday's sprint race was won by Sergio Perez of Mexico over Oliver Turby of England. Maldonado and Bianchi finished 4th and 5th, respectively. And as the season is now coming to an end, we're going to give a championship snapshot every podcast. GP2, Maldonado is leading with 56 points. Daniel Claus of Spain, 37 second. And Jules Bianchi is 3rd on 31 points. I tell you what, 31 to 56 is a pretty big point at the spec series. If Bianchi pulls a fast one on Maldonado, he's very quick, and he had some issues in the early stages, and he's a rookie. That will really cement his reputation as a tremendous racing driver, which I know he is. Maldonado is like in his fourth year, and I think if he wins the championship, then Senor Chavez and Pedro Vesa will pony up some dineros to see him in Venezuela, in Formula One. So either way, it's going to be interesting, and we wish all the drivers all the best. GP3, third win in a row in the feature race for Esteban Gutierrez of Monterrey, Mexico. Rio Haryanto was second. He is from Indonesia. And third was Swiss Nico Müller, or maybe Mueller. Sunday's reverse grid, this was a real barnstormer. The race was won by Daniel Murad, who is from Toronto, Canada, but is racing under a Lebanese license. So my congratulations to him and his people. Due to commercial and family tree connection, he's racing under the Lebanese flag. Great battle behind him for second place between Mirko Bortolotti, Italian guy who's also in the Ferrari driver development program. He had finished 8th in the first race, so he was on pole because they do a reverse grid for the top 8. So he got into a real dogfight with Esteban Gutierrez, and American Alexander Rossi also got in the action. Mirko won the battle but lost the war in second place as he was penalized for shoving Gutierrez off the track in the closing stages, which allowed Rossi to sneak through in second. And apparently Rossi and Gutierrez went to the checkered flag like Mansell and Senna at Jerez in 86. A tremendous battle. And after the penalty, Mirko dropped to 13th while Esteban was awarded third place. Championship snapshot, Esteban Gutierrez over Alexander Rossi. 52 to 26, both are with ART team, and very pleased to say F1 Weekly has good media relationships with both of them and also with Sunday's race winner Daniel Murad. And hopefully Clark Rogers, with so many titles plus the executive producer, will put the interview this weekend with Daniel Murad, Robert Wickens and Teddy Yip Jr. And you know, I think I should mention now that we are talking about these people, this week I am going on a long haul trip back home to visit the familia, and I have to return for back work purposes before the month is out. So I'm flying through Frankfurt, which is in Germany, as you know. And on the way back, I'm going to take a detour to Hockenheim, which is not too far from Frankfurt. And voila, it's the weekend of the German Grand Prix. So hopefully I will be able to wrap up another 15, 20 interviews. Then we can for sure have an interview every week. And so that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm already talking to some people, and hopefully it will all work out. Shall we continue, sir?
Please.
Thank you, sir. Formula BMW, I think we have a couple of stars in the making here in this series also. They were also at Silverstone support race. Local lad Jack Harvey was the winner in Saturday's race over Dutch driver Robin Friens, and Carlos Sainz Jr. was third. Michael Lewis from Southern California is the only American in the series, and he was 10th. The podium for the second race was reverse of race one, Carlos Sainz Jr. becoming the first rookie this season to win a race. Friens was second and Harvey third. Michael Lewis was 9th. And so far, all the races, most of the races have been won by Jack Harvey from England. We posted his interview a short while ago. Then Robin Friens from Holland has won some races. And Carlos Sainz, big name, but he's also very talented. I think he's like 15 years old. So see, this is the problem in motor racing. All the talented drivers who are knocking on the door of Formula 1, GP3, especially GP2, they really need to win the championship first year or second year. Because between all these young whippersnappers who are not in GP2, somebody will come and pull off a Nico Hülkenberg or a Lewis Hamilton and win the championship first year. And if you lose a championship in your second, third year to a rookie, you look like parts.
You look like Maldonado.
Yeah, even though he's a nice guy.
He's wonderful.
Yeah.
But his chances of getting in Formula 1...
The only way he can get is Venezuelan oil company.
Right.
It's like the Petrov situation.
Correct.
Okay, let's do a championship snapshot. Halfway through the season, Harvey leads with 203 points. Friens is second on 168 points. And Sainz Jr. is third with 144. AutoGP, which used to be known as Euro Formula 3000 or something like that, they were at Manicourt. Romain Grosjean was the winner in race one. How many times have we heard his name now?
He wins every race.
Yeah. Romain Grosjean was the winner in race one over Duncan Tappy, who was from England. And American Jake Rosenzweig was fourth. Race two of the weekend was won by Carlos Iaconelli of Brazil over Jan Cheruz, who was from Czech Republic. Grosjean was taken out at the start when he collided with the stalled car. Rosenzweig was 12th. He is from Boston area.
That's the only way to keep Grosjean from winning. You got to wreck his car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's ultra quick. I would love to see him get a fair shot in Formula 1.
I agree.
American Le Mans Series race at Miller Motorsports Park in Tuolumne, Utah was won by David Brabham and Simon Pagenaud. Now something of your interest, World Rally Championship, first ever in Bulgaria, Citroën 1-2-3-4 with Sebastian Loeb winning, so that's good for him. Now we come to the Mark Webber's home series, uppercut Australian V8. The Sucrogen Townsville 400, Holden Commodores take command and finish 1-2 with Jimmy Winker over Garth Tander. Frosty in a Ford was the winner. That would be Mr. Mark Winterbottom over fellow Ford driver James Courtney with Garth Tander third. Courtney leads the championship from Winker and Winterbottom. Next event is at the beautiful Phillip Island track 9 weeks later. Quite a big gap there. And of course, now your favorite series from Chicagoland, NASCAR. David Ruteman was the winner for Toyota. Ford boy, cousin Carl Edwards was second. And Chevy's Jeff Gordon was third. Monty was 16th. And finally, I got an email from our Spanish listener who lives in Holland, Mr. Javier Vicente. He's doing all right. And I would like to wish all our Spanish listeners congratulations.
Viva España.
Viva España.
Los campeones del mundo.
Yeah, exactly. Congratulations to all of them.
That must have been a very interesting evening for him, being a Spaniard in Holland.
Yeah, and he
during that match.
Yes, he mentioned to me that he was at his girlfriend's parents' house, who is Dutch, who are Dutch, you know. So let's hope nobody has scratches from Heineken or something like that. So in celebration of that, we have some little music from Julio. Enjoy.
Iglesias?
Senor, si, senor.
Nass, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mundial. Now, let's introduce the interview.
With Adrian Zog.
Correct.
Adrian Zog is a very nice kid. I met him for the first time at in Barcelona, where I was for the Barcelona GP, Spanish Grand Prix and the GP2 races. You know, I got to know him when he got into this A1 GP series. He was very quick. I think on his first debut with the team, South African team, he was on pole position, actually in Holland, Zandvoort, and did very well. Then he raced some in the GP2 also, and then he was not racing for a while, so I ran into him, had a very nice conversation. And what is so interesting, I'd always noticed, you know, when you read about on a team driver's bio, that he is from South Africa, but was born in Singapore and lives in Switzerland. So quite Mr. International, and it's very interesting and fascinating his story, why it's like this. And I wish him all the best. Right now he's with Trident Racing off Italy, doing GP2, and I'm looking forward to seeing him again in Hockenheim. And I hope our listeners will enjoy this conversation with Adrian Zog. Thank you. Okay, folks, I'm here in Barcelona with a very interesting Mr. International, Adrian Zog. Adrian, welcome to F1 Weekly. What's your story?
Hello, first of all. Hi. As you asked, my father is Swiss, my mom is South African, and my father, he lived in South Africa in Cape Town for around 8 or 9 years. That's when he met my mom. But due to the apartheid those days, they couldn't stay there, couldn't get married, so actually they moved over to Singapore for a while. That's where I was born. My father also had his work there. So, but then after a year, they actually moved back to South Africa just for some short period, and then back to Switzerland, where I then actually did all my schooling education. So at the end, I ended up racing for South Africa.
Good. Now, you were you said you did all your education in Switzerland, a country where motor racing is banned. So how did you discover motorsports?
Well, yeah, it's quite interesting because there was no motorsport background in my family at all. So it was actually basically through watching Formula One on television, which caught my attraction. And once I saw Schumacher and all of them racing around, you know, it just got me excited. So from that point on, I just wanted to go karting. And, you know, but I was already with the age of 8, 9, 10, but my parents didn't have any idea that time. So when I was old enough, when I was 12, I called a karting club myself and found out how things work. But from that point on, where my parents also saw that it's really what I want to do, they supported me 100%.
Okay. How long were you in karting, and what's your biggest achievement in karting?
Well, I only started racing karts when I was 13, so I only did about 3.5 years. And then I went to do the talent sighting from Formula BMW, where I was one of the guys to win the scholarship. So that made it possible for me. That and the support of Red Bull at the time made it possible for me to start off my career in Formula BMW in 2004.
Okay. And how long were you in Formula BMW?
I did 1 year in Formula BMW and progressed the following year to Formula Renault Euro Cup.
How did you do there? And who were some of the drivers that you raced against in Formula Renault and Formula BMW?
Formula BMW, pretty famous names now. It's Vettel, Sebastian Vettel. So he was in his second year when I did my first year there. He won the championship. I finished seventh in my first year. And then Formula Renault Euro Cup, I also raced against people like Kamui Kobayashi, where I won my first race against him in Bilbao on a street track. And there are plenty of names, Carlo Van Damme, there are quite a lot, but I guess Kobayashi is the one most people know because he's now in Formula One.
Now, Sebastian Vettel, when he won the Formula BMW Championship, like you said, in his second year, I think he won 18 of 20 races. And he used to show up on the podium with the Afro hairdo. Did he learn that from you?
I'm not sure. Well, I had it naturally at the time. He had to put it on the wig, but yeah, for sure, it was great fun.
Now,
When he was in his second year, you were a rookie. Are you surprised he's in Formula One and, you know, now rated as one of the top? Was the talent there to see even at that stage?
Well, I mean, to win 18 from 20 races, you know, in the Formula BMW, which I think was is one of the strongest categories where you start coming from karting, was a, you know, really a great achievement, you know, at a very young age. So, but you know, people come from complete different backgrounds. You know, he is also one of the guys that grew up with karting when he was like a little toddler, most probably was 6 years old or something, and. You know, people just progress different. For me, it took a while to really, you know, get into the whole thing. As I said, I only did like karting quite briefly on a national base, and for me, the first year was just really to learn how to drive properly. And so we all came from a complete different situation, different ways. But after that, I didn't really have the chance to race against him. But I mean, for sure, because seeing I was in the Red Bull Junior program with him, I saw his progress. So for sure, he deserves where he is today.
Are you still with the Red Bull program?
No, I'm not with Red Bull since end of 2007.
Okay, now Robert Wickens was recently dropped by Red Bull, and he made a statement that they put a lot of pressure on drivers all the time. Did you feel that way also when you were in their program?
About the pressure?
Yeah, pressure. Yes, please.
Well, at the end, I think the most pressure comes actually from yourself, you know, because at the end you want to go somewhere, you wanna win races and everything. So everything which adds to it, which for sure is maybe more with Red Bull than maybe perhaps with other sponsors. But at the end, for me personally, that wasn't a great deal, because you know I was in the program from 2004 to 2007, so basically growing up and developing within that kind of environment. So that's nothing that kind of, how can I say, really adds to it in a great amount. You know, it's something you have to handle, and I think, to be honest with you, especially for this motor racing world, I think it's a good school actually to go through. Also, Dr. Marco at the end, I think he's a very tough person, but on the other hand, you know, he's, I think, a good guy to actually prepare you for what's to come in Formula One, or basically in the racing world as a general. And at the end, it's not that Red Bull dropped me end of 2007. I mean, I had a very difficult year in GP2 because I had my surgery with compartment syndrome just previous to the season, so I took a long time to recover. And they were actually pretty fair because they wanted to give me the opportunity to do Formula Nippon in Japan and then return to GP2 the following year. But at the time, the management decided to go a different way, and so actually we decided to go away from Red Bull, which at the end maybe wasn't a great decision, but you know, I don't look back, I'm looking into the future.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. The Formula Nippon deal was available from Red Bull. Who was your management, and why did they decide not to go there? Ralf Schumacher was there, Pedro de la Rosa. What was the logic behind that?
Well, at the end, my management was Peter Collins, and I think he's you know, done great things for me, and we had a good relationship. And but at the end, you know, that time we were so close. You know, obviously with GP2 you're closer than with any other series to go to Formula One. And to be fair, he was promised some support, some investors, which then unfortunately didn't come through at the time when we needed it. So you know, we had obviously some pressure to decide quite early, end of 2007. So we had to decide one way or the other, and unfortunately maybe it wasn't the greatest decision, because I was then left without the drive for the whole year. So at the end, as I say, you know, I'm not pointing fingers at anyone. At the end, we're not working together now for some time, but you know, that's how things work in motor racing. You know, you just have to see at the end where you stay and the way you go and make the right decisions at the time.
Peter Collins, is he still based in Switzerland, and are you still under his management?
No, as I said, I'm not under his management since since 2008. And I think he's still living in Switzerland. Yeah.
Who's guiding and managing your career now?
Right now, I don't have a management. So I was doing quite a lot by myself, which wasn't so easy, to be honest. But I'm in talk with some people, so which are interested. So Let's see.
Okay. Now, you caught my attention when you were representing your country, South Africa, and I know you are very quick because you had a very dominating weekend once in Holland. How did you feel representing South Africa, and how was the experience racing all over the world?
Oh, well, that's something that made me very proud. You know, also when you know a bit more about my family history and about my parents, you know, that actually weren't happy to leave South Africa at the time. And it's actually something that they never spoke about in a big way. But just even though we were based in Switzerland, we always grew up with the kind of South African mentality because I have lots of family there and everything. So also just for my parents, it made them very proud to see me racing for South Africa. And also for myself, I always felt more South African in a way, even though I feel also Swiss. So that's the one thing that was a great for me, a privilege, and at the end it was a good thing for me because the South Africans finally also got to know that there's somebody out there over in Europe flying the flag. So as a whole, also made me a lot more popular in South Africa.
And what is Adrian Zog doing this year?
Well, I just concluded my contract to do a GP2 season with Trident.
Okay.
So that finally all came together. That was the target to do this year. Mm-hmm. So, yep, now I'm here.
Okay, great to see you. Have you ever considered racing in the United States IndyCar series?
Yes, very much. But once again, you know, it was very, very difficult to, you know, when you manage your career yourself, to, especially at my age, I'm still pretty young, to really find contacts and to know people. It's quite far away. And I was actually planning some trips to go visit some races because, you know, I'm very much interested in the whole scene, in the whole racing in the States, especially the IndyCar. So, you know, who knows?
How many languages do you speak?
Well, English, German, Swiss German, a bit of French.
Okay, will you do me a favor? Say a message to listeners of F1 Weekly. We have listeners all over the world, and believe it or not, even in South Africa and, of course, Switzerland too.
Okay, I'm quite surprised. Well, I can speak in Swiss German.
Let's do that. I've never heard Swiss. I think I have heard Swiss German. Let's hear it.
Just slightly different to High German. Yeah. It's just a dialect.
You guys say jawohl?
Depending from what part of Switzerland you are. Okay. Obviously, we have a French, Italian, and a Swiss part. But even the Swiss dialects have changed, you know, the accents and things. So sometimes we don't even understand each other, depending which region we're from.
Okay, hallo zusammen, hier ist der Adrian Zog. Ich weiß nicht, ob ihr mich kennt, weil ich fahre für Südafrika eigentlich, aber bin genauso Schweizer in meinem Herzen. Und ich hoffe, ihr verfolgt mich und drückt mir Daumen.
Now, for people like me, we need a translation, please.
I said, hello guys in Switzerland, I'm Adrian.
What about chicks?
Well, guys is a general, you know, I mean women and men, but the chicks is for the private, it's not for everybody to know.
Okay.
I was basically just saying I hope they holding thumbs for me, even though most probably they don't know me so well because I'm flying the South African flag, not really the Swiss flag, but I just hope that they're all supporting me.
Great. Adrian, a great pleasure to see you.
Adrian, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
Hi, I'm Mickey Monraz from Spain, and I'm listening for F1 Weekly. Hola, soy Mickey Monraz, soy de España, y estoy escuchando para Fórmula 1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we go into the wrap-up, it's the Forum Updates.
This week's Forum Updates brought to us by Koala. The forum has been as active as ever. Silverstone has come and gone. Most forum members seem to think the track changes had improved the circuit. And also, we're happy to see Webber win the race given the events of the weekend. The general consensus was that it was a good race, if not a classic, in the mold of the 1992 or 2008 British GPs. Dr. Mark F. and Ye managed to attend the practice day and provide us with a few photos. But Doc, what's up? You post pictures of Ye posing in front of his battery-powered Toyota in the parking lot, none of the Silverstone pit babes. Where are your priorities? Some of the active forum topics have included Ye's Silverstone stat update, Bruno bombshell following Bruno Senna's drop from the race, Webber and Vettel's old chassis, which, after the race, became a wide-ranging discussion on the events of the weekend within Red Bull and the relationship between Webber and Vettel. Britain's greatest F1 drivers, based on the top 10 list from the London Telegraph, 1-5 being Jim Clark, Jackie Stewart, Stirling Moss, Nigel Mansell, and Graham Hill. Most forum members agreed with the top 5, though there was some discussion reordering the 6 through 10. Alonso adamant he will win the title, a thread discussion based on the Autosport report that Alonso still believes he has a good chance for the championship. The Countryside thread has continued its normal random subject scope, mostly concentrating on medical issues this week, which culminated in Yates threatening to post an x-ray of his foot. The forum prediction competition continues. Weber's win mixed things up a bit. Quala maintained the Weber faith and won the week with a score of 131 points, followed by Cyan with 114 and Cosmuth on 108. Standings after Silverstone are Quala at 1103, followed by Cyan at 1102, with Starfleet close behind at 1094. Regular poster, Forza Minardi made a welcome return to the forum after a few months away this week with his mid-season rant thread. Welcome back, Forza. We missed you. That's it for the update this week. If you haven't checked out the forum, give it a look. New members are always welcome. We are a friendly bunch, and it is a great opportunity to discuss the hot topics in Formula One with people who also love Formula One. Thank you, Koala. That was a really good update.
Thank you, Stephen. A quick reminder, the San Francisco Formula One group, check them out at sff1.com. They are always doing some activities related to F1, and they raffle off some nice Kaye photographs, so take a look at that. I want to remind everybody, we have F1 Weekly hats. Of course, these are the baseball-style caps. They're on the merchandise page. They come in blue or stone white. $16 plus shipping and handling. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, simply go to CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our Facebook and Twitter sites. Do a search for F1 Weekly and make us a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. I want to wish Nasser Hamid a bon voyage. Enjoy your trip to Karachi and, of course,
safe travels
to Alemania, where you will go to the German Grand Prix.
Thank you, sir.
And interview everyone.
And their brother.
Exactly. So there you have it. I want to thank all the listeners who make this show possible. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.